members. Good morning. How are you?
Now we won't come back.
How was your weekend? You know, if you ask that question, you get all sorts of responses. How was the weekend? It will depend on what you would have been doing. Members, we meet again jointly as the committees of water and sanitation and also SCOPA. We have since extended an invitation to another committee that deals with the public service and administration. You must have seen a few of them. The chair of the committee, Mrs. Lesoma, is here. Mr. Godi, the co-chair, is here. Members of SCOPA and also members of water and sanitation are here. The technical team has been working with us on matters before our committees. Jointly, the two committees, Water and Sanitation and SCOPA, with their researchers and also content advisors, working together with the legal team from Parliament, Mr. Jenkins is there, as a resource, the AG's office has been with us. I'm not too sure if we have had any National Treasury people here. I know the AG's office is there in full force with their business executives. National Treasury was expected to be with us in this whole process, but I don't see any of them here. Be that as it may, ours is a straightforward session that deals specifically with those three areas that talk to the focal areas, the terms of reference, and also the draft program. Having been assigned the technical team, they have been able to pull together some ideas which we do have in front of us, and these were circulated, I want to believe, some 2 weeks ago, if I'm not mistaken. Be that as it may, we do have those three sets of documents, and there's been quite a keen interest on the part of the media on this on these matters. But what I do want to make it very clear is that we have the kind of job that is not enviable to many, especially also to some of our officials, unfortunately, precisely because our work does not bring any family, does not bring any friendship, does not bring any friendship or comradeship for that matter. Our work is that of having to do an oversight on the part of the executive. Following the money, to protecting the public purse. So anything wrong can only be wrong. There cannot be any other way out. So whoever else who is to be seen or who would be wishing to be doing anything wrong, that person must be warned, whether that person is in the local government, provincial or national. For as long as we do anything wrong, it can only remain wrong. Any transgression, therefore, shall have to be treated as such. Any transgression is effectively doing something illegal and doing something wrong insofar as law is concerned. and that shall be tested, and that shall be expected to be tested in any court of law through somebody opening up a court, or rather a law, a case in any police station. So we have been encouraging members, we have been encouraging out there, those that have information, to find it and make it easy to go out there and open such cases. I think that shall also do us a great bit of work, because it shall save us from any witch hunt, if you like. So let's feel free, repeat, that we go out there where we know we have information, somebody has transgressed, we go out to any police station and open such a case. Let's feel free to do that. Whilst these other processes are going to be continuing, these two are not conflicting each other. In fact, they work together, as it were. So having said those, I think we should, without waste of time, move straight to what is expected of us, and then move with speed. Unfortunately, we promise not to be about hype. We promise not to be about all these other, grand standing. We need to be prompt and go straight to the issues and follow the money. If money has been wrongly used, that must be followed. We are not going to be about gossip. But if anyone has any evidence, that must be brought to our attention for us to be able to move and move with speed. Okay. Kocha, you want to make any comment before we start with our session?
Thank you, Chair. firstly, is to say that some of our comrades from Scopa may join us in due course, but I do know that Comrade Vincent Smith, as you know, he chairs a committee on the Auditor General. They are having a meeting outside Parliament, as it is now. Secondly, I think the issues for today are very straightforward. I also do think we just need to go into them, because this talk since the 27th of February, we have agreed in principle we need to do A, B, C, D. Today, assist us to take that from theory to practice. So I think let's get on with it and see how we tie down the practical aspects of the work.
Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, and thank you so much for the invite. For the housekeeping matters, purposes, may I then table the apologies of the minister responsible for the department, because the portfolio committee, then normally we always make sure that the minister also does attend in such sittings as well. There has been a formal apology due to cabinet sitting. Other members have submitted their apologies in writing, because it clashes, since it's Tuesday is not our standing for follow sitting, so with other their principal committees that they sit on, which I will forward in writing those apologies without tabling them here now, Chair. But I thought I must table that apologies. Secondly, to appreciate the invite, is that I'll take upon myself any issues related to DPSA and Public Service Commission and table them formally before the committee if needs arises, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you. That was the chairperson of the Committee on Public Service and Administration, Mrs. Lissouma. Thanks for that, and also thanks for having responded positively to being with us. I believe, and I speak, believe it be so on behalf of all of us, that that part of our work dealing with the public service and administration is going to be critically important as we pursue our work going forward. Okay, thank you for all of that. Members, without waste of time, the documents, the three of them, we shall deal with the draft terms of reference, the establishment of a commission inquiry into the functioning of the Department of Water and Sanitation. We shall have to make comments on the specific document, and accordingly, and also ratify or one of those. Any takers? Okay. the co-chair is advising that we do it by paragraph by paragraph. I tell you that we have received these copies, members. We did. Okay, let's before we start, if any of the technical team would wish us just to take us through very, very briefly, without necessarily getting onto any specific paragraph by paragraph, just an overarching comment. None? Okay, that's fine. Members, that's now for us to take this and take ownership of this document at the end. Mushula?
Good morning. I just want to ask, before we start, Chairperson, in terms of this document, do we start with the draft guidelines as this document pertains, or we're going to start with the terms of reference? Or, I just wanted to speak something in regard to the focus area. I wanted to suggest something.
I was following the program. The program says we start off with the terms of reference, and then followed by focus area, focus areas, and then the program. Okay. We're going to kick on.
No, thanks, Chair. Chair, I suggest we follow your earlier proposal. For instance, when we did, some of us, we have just received these documents now, and I don't think we are going to make some meaningful contributions. Maybe the drafters of a document, if they can give us that is an overview that is of this document, so that we can be in a position to follow. That is the rationale behind that is this document.
Okay, we have a number of those among ourselves here. I see this researcher, Mr. Manungfula. Who else is a researcher from SCOPA? Content advisor? Mr. Advocate Jenkins is there from the legal team. Any one of us, of those that I've made mention of, if you can maybe just take two of those commentaries. Anyone? Mrs. Dawood? Thank you. Mrs. Dawood? May you, please? Thank you. Can you give us a synopsis of what is contained in this without necessarily getting into any specific details per se? That's all what we are looking for. Members have just received some of this, especially from other committees. Thanks.
Myself, I was On the terms of reference, if you can maybe go to the procedure, because the other first two pages are background information. So if you can maybe go to the procedures, and then if members have anything they want to add on the procedure, how the inquiry is going to be conducted.
Can anyone simply just give us an overview of this document from any of the technical team? This document is informed by the following, and this was the context, and this is how you arrived at this decision, informed by whatever practices or experiences, wherever else. This being a new practice or experience that Parliament is going through, those kinds of details. Advocate Jenkins, thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Are we on the terms of reference or the focus areas? Well, the terms of reference, I can just briefly, Chairperson, the following the decision of the committees, I think earlier last month, to have a sort of hybrid system of evidence leader and inquiry through the members, allocating certain questions to members, much in the way that SCOPA does it. We drafted this document first setting out the sort of legal foundation for this inquiry. And the rules are pretty clear that portfolio committees and SCOPA itself, not a portfolio committee as such, have the power to investigate anything within their area or the area of control or their portfolio as such. So that is part B. And part A is just the decision that was taken. We put out the objectives, that's page 2, Chairperson, of the inquiry. As well as what we're looking for as an outcome, the criminal charges to be laid if we find something, the recovery of money we're lost. Of course, one will have to look at who's responsible for recovering that money, and it's obviously the accounting officers from the department. Then we get to the terms of reference, Chair, where we looked at what is wrong with the department, what has been identified in the various reports from SCOPA and from the Portfolio Committee. There's also the area of disputing what the Auditor General has found that we want to look into. There's also issues that we've discussed in our meeting in terms of witnesses that we have to call previous accounting officers to get information from and so forth. Compliance with laws, so then we'll have to look at maybe some of the audit committees of the department and whether what they did with non-compliance issues. And then, Chair, the last page, part 3, well, let me speak of the time frames. We've identified the last 5 years from 2012 to date to look at it, and that would be quite important. Otherwise, we are really swimming in the sea so that we know more or less where we're going. And then the procedure itself, there will be an evidence leader, witnesses that needs to be identified. If the witnesses don't appear voluntarily, we'll have to summon them in terms of the Powers and Privileges Act, which has its own procedure there. Issue of public participation, and the Constitution requires that not just legislative process, but all processes require public participation, so the committee can decide to call for submissions, whether written or oral or both, to see whether there's something or information that can come out of that. And Chair, this, I mean, it's quite a brief, very overarching paragraph F, but in the end one must look at witnesses, whether they're available, when they're available, as I said, and there will be issues, especially when you get into the criminal areas, if there is criminal conduct. How's that going to impact on maybe further criminal charges to be laid and so forth and so forth. So that's just briefly, Chair, what we sort of thrown out there. I think what it's important to realize is that it's a document that's a work in progress, because from the deliberations, from the briefings we can get from, or that we already got from the AG and the SIU, further briefings we can get, as well as public participation, more issues can be added or more things can come out. But I think that's for now, Chair, just very briefly. I think what's important is to think that we're working within a certain time frame. If we can establish that or nail that down, that'll be good, so we can also then call for anything that happened during that period and to look at it, things happening in that period. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Advocate Jenkins. Any further comments from some of the contributors? Are we okay? Okay, that then summarizes what is expected of us to look into. And Mr. Ross?
Just in terms of the terms of reference, I wonder if we can add perhaps another bullet point, which is the effect on ordinary residents in towns where we find the water boards throttling the supply of water to residents because of the non-payment of municipalities. It has a huge impact on civil society and on residents and inhabitants of towns and cities. And perhaps just to, if we can have the extent of the problem identified, how many towns have been experiencing limitation of water supply? Because I see in your terms of reference, one of the bullet points, investigate the influence of external stakeholders, and I would like us to investigate the influence on ordinary residents.
Can we just hang on that one, Mr. Rodney? I guess you're already at work.
Okay.
Almost getting us.
I'm jumping the gun, yeah.
I'm sort of saying that.
Okay, fine. So now I thought you can add a bullet point.
No, it's fine. It's acceptable if you can just park on it, and then we'll come to that at that point. Let's then agree that, welcome, Mr. Sangwa. Let's then agree that we shall have to go straight to the document itself. It's written there, draft terms of reference. Of course, when we shall have concluded on it, and adopted these terms of reference, it shall stop being a draft. So let's just have that at the back of the mind. Then we are on background. If any comments to make?
Chair, I'm not sure if this is... On procedure, are we still on the terms of reference? Or are we going back a step?
We are on page 1, A,
are
which
we
is
going to work through it like that? Okay.
Yes,
right.
Thank you.
My apologies.
Okay.
Thank you, Comrade Chair. I think the background does need to be re-looked at. My take would be the background seeks to narrate a sequence of events up to the point where we now have to have the terms of reference. And for me, the starting point should be the BRRR report of the Portfolio Committee, and then the meeting on the 27th of February of SCOPA, which is the first line. Subsequent to that was the joint meeting we had on the 20th of March, where we now formally agreed that this is what we want to do. And then our meeting, I think, on the 27th of March, where we had the AG, National Treasurer, and the SIU. I think the meeting of the 20th, that's where we agreed on the need to have the terms of reference, to have focus areas, and also to draft a program. And then the meeting on the 27th of March. So then you can then have that last part that says, then you now have this draft in terms of reference. Then you are able to have a flow. And then you then need to take SCOPA requested to be part of the Commission of Inquiry, because then that will become unnecessary, having narrated how the sequence of events unfolded.
That comment talks to the drafters. I take it that you have been able to pick those up, issues up. Okay, Mama Lesum.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I thought I was not going to comment on background, but having said what Honorable Godi have raised, to say probably also you need to drag the issue as far as the previous financial audit reports of this way, because that one also, you don't just come to the B2R. They are previous years that then warrants this. So to speak, I'm saying that probably without mentioning the years, but you can, because it's just a
2015/17, whatever it may be, because the question from the outsider like myself would say that since the issues have been persisting, what else have you have done other than when it gets also elevated to SCOPA, because SCOPA should be the last resort. But I'm saying in terms of the background, must give a sense that we have been, as a portfolio committee, responsible doing our expected oversight, as it were. Thank you, Chair.
Now, I guess the point raised by Mrs. Lesoma talks more to a trend that has been persisting within the department that has since led to the PRR report making all those recommendations. The trend talks to 2016-17. In particular, 2016-17, when it became abundantly clear that here we were heading for a big challenge within the department. So I think that's the background that Mrs. Lesoma is making reference to. So just in addition to what Mr. Godi was guiding us on, are we okay with all of those? Those are all going to be added as part of this background. Now, I guess it also would help us if we were to be making all these, and perhaps if we had somebody making those corrections or additions whilst we are at work, perhaps having to reflect on the screen here so that immediately we are done, we don't have to wait for another day for us to come back. We are immediately satisfied having seen it in writing there. As soon as we are out of here, we have only to be printed whatever shall have been agreed upon. I think that shall help us and take us far. Just to also to look at time as well. Are we able to do that? Connecting and also making all those additions and corrections whilst we are at work. Yeah, you have to connect here. Okay, so that gives us some idea of what our background should look like. And then we shall have to come back to that perhaps in the course of our work as we do all of these terms of reference. We are now on section B of this document, which talks to the rules of the National Assembly. Once again, members, we are starting something new here as Parliament. SABC started this process. We had public enterprise being involved in such a process as well. There are a number of other departments or other committees of Parliament that have also followed suit. I know for a fact Minerals is one of those. I can't remember. Home Affairs, I'm told, they are also pursuing a similar exercise that we're pursuing. So Parliament is hard at work trying to correct all the wrongs that have been found. This is part of our oversight work. It is guided, of course, by the sections in the rules that we are about to talk to. If any comments? Page 1 of the rules, rule 227, section 1BI, 9th edition, provide that a committee must maintain an oversight of the exercise of this portfolio of national executive authority, including the implementation of legislation. And it goes on. Those rules go on. page number 2, still on the rules, if any, they're straightforward. Okay, section C, objectives of the inquiry. Any comments on the objectives of the inquiry?
Chair, I just want to get an understanding in terms of bullet number 1, to call witnesses to testify and provide evidence. I just wanted to ask in terms of these witnesses, are the witnesses that are being identified in terms of the committee to do its work, and or is it witnesses that people will just want to come and also provide information? I mean, in terms of inquiry, there are those witnesses that you call them, you subpoena them, but there are those people that have some information that they can come. Is it same thing, some kind of a whistleblower or volunteer, if someone wants to come, it's not in the list as identified by the committee?
Any further comments? We shall also include responses to the concerns or questions raised by Mrs. Shulan.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I think Honourable Shulani raises a very valid point. And I think we need to create a mechanism whereby we, this is uncharted ground for us, but whereby we advertise this commission, the work we're doing, and call on those who may have information to come forward, and then create a mechanism whereby they can contact us. Because in my experience in my previous career, and also here at Scopa, that you get a lot done with credible information from whistleblowers. A lot. They enable you to go much further. For instance, I was discussing with the AG representatives. They allow you to go that little bit further. They tell you what's under the carpet, which is, where often we are stopped. So I think we just need to create a mechanism to allow that to happen. Thank you, Chair.
I guess my take, and perhaps which should be the concern raised by Mr. Shulani, as the objective of the inquiry, because if you are to begin to say to call on witnesses, it therefore says this is how you are going to do it. But here for now, we're calling for the objective. The objective in that sentence should be talking about looking at alleged financial mismanagement, weaknesses in the internal controls, governance failures, and maladministration. That shall be the objective. So the first part of calling for witnesses and whatever, really shouldn't come in here, because that's talking about the how part at the end as to how you do it. Mr. Godi?
But maybe firstly, Shengwa, I saw your hand up.
Thank you, Chair. Well, I'm partly covered now because I was in first reading on page 3 of this document. I think what Honourable Shulan is speaking to, when we get to it, is covered. Maybe we'll work on it when we get there. But I think the issues she raised have been provided for in the document. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. You've just taken the words out of my mouth.
Okay, that shall then be taken care of bullet point 1. Bullet point 2, if any comments on that? talks about the joint report with recommendations be submitted for discussion and adoption. Again, this should be part of how, and also part of a process at the end, what happens. It cannot be part of the objective of this exercise. Are we all okay on that one? So the suggestion there is to take that one, that bullet point two, take it away. It belongs elsewhere as part of our program. Are we in the same wavelength? And then page, bullet point three, as it stands here, talks about the criminal charges having to be laid against implicated officials where applicable. Can this be part of an inquiry of this nature? Yeah.
My apologies. I tend to be slow in the morning. I think the objectives talk to what do we want to achieve at the end. So my reading is that all the bullet points that are there, they are fine, because they are saying to the journalists who are here, who are asking, but what do these people want to do? What do they want to achieve at the end of the process? So I think for me, the bullet points that are here, all of them, they give a person a sense of what is going to happen when we're done with the process. So I would suggest that unless somebody wants to make an addition, but as they are, I think they're fine.
May I agree with you, because I'm seeing that whatever's being edited there is taking out, and I think bullet point one in the document is quite succinct in terms of the overarching objectives. And I'm in agreement with you, Chairperson. And so, Chair Godi. Co-chair, let me rather say that. I think the objectives suffice. Maybe it should just be a matter of wording, but I think what the essence of what is captured here, particularly bullet point one, because in any case the procedure, as appears in page three, gives expression in greater detail in terms of how you arrive at those, achieving those objectives. So I would like to believe that's not complicated. I think what is here tells us exactly what it is that we need to do. Because even there, when you look at the time frames on page three, when it sort of puts that time frame within what is captured here, particularly bullet point one. So
okay.
I think, yeah, I'm in agreement with what you check this.
That's fine. Mr. Basa?
Chairperson, on bullet point three, I would like us to add implicated officials, politicians, and any other person where applicable. There could be politicians involved in corruption within this department, but there could also be individuals that worked with officials. So I would like us to extend that.
Okay, that's a straightforward one. I take it that we're fine with that.
Chair, to simplify, if my colleague would agree with me, it's just to charges will be laid against all implicated persons. It covers everyone. Nobody's excluded.
Is that
all right?
I take it that we are fine with that last part by Tim. Mr. Gikan?
Yeah. Chair, my concern is on the same. Hey, my secretary here. Okay. My concern on the same issue is, are we not limiting ourselves if we want to be specific on criminal charges would be laid against implicated officials, rather than maybe rephrasing it, that is to cover the consequence management? Because obviously, criminal charges would be part and parcel of consequence management, and also you would have the internal, that is disciplinary hearings, to cover, that is both of them.
How would you read that? Can you assist us also, Mrs. Lissama?
I was not going to, but let me start with my first point that I raised my hand on. Because you'll forgive me, I'm a little bit naive when it comes to this space. If then we say upfront as the ultimate one, second bulletin from the bottom, who's going to lay the charges? Because also in the back of your mind, knowing that, borrowing lessons from other commission, which I haven't finalized, by the way, even then. So I just asking myself, are we going to be doing it as a committee or through the speaker after the report has been submitted and all that? Probably that one is the latter one, but I'm happy that we're looking at it, and I hope that we're not going also to finalize them here, because we must borrow from the other lessons, so that ultimately we should not do a PR exercise. But people must be accountable for whatever maladministration that they have done. So I'm saying probably that's a space that I thought probably the legal advisor who's here, the legal mind, can assist us in that space. There. Where can you locate that one? Finally, we're clear as a committee that we want to see that happening. But are you going to say, because when you start doing this, when it flows from what Honorable Gauthier raised in terms of the report being submitted to NA, which is a procedure matter, by the way, which always has to happen, then that one is a common sense to me to say then, which means you are also binding yourself as the joint committee that you are going to lay those criminal charges.
Can I give us a possible Gauthier solution?
Okay,
just a possible solution, make it easy, is a new point number 3. Recommend the initiation of disciplinary procedures against implicated persons. Because we can't lay those disciplinary procedures because we're inside. We can lay criminal charges because we're members of the public. But just recommend the initiation of disciplinary procedures against implicated persons. And we're going to do those recommendations in our report. That'll work. That covers both angles.
Mr.
Gordon?
Thanks, Comrade Chair. I think the addition that my comrade has made in terms of disciplinary action, because when you go to the focus areas, you'll find that there is a regular expenditure, there is also fruitless and wasteful expenditure. And you'll find that for a regular expenditure, you may find that in the main, you need to have disciplinary action taken against officials for not having followed processes, for negligence, where there is no criminality that is identified. And it will still raise your question. If we say disciplinary action must be taken, is it us who are going to do it? No, it is not us. If you say criminal charges must be laid, is it necessarily us? Still not, because Parliament, that's not Parliament's domain in terms of the Constitution. So if you look at Scopus reports, in most instances, the recommendation for disciplinary action is always there, but it is the function of the accounting officer to do that. So what I think we need to do there, one, is to add what my comrade has added, because it's not only going to be criminal instances. There will be instances where you need disciplinary action to be taken. So the sentence should include disciplinary action be taken and da-da-da-da-da against not officials and politicians, but against implicated individuals. Because you may find that there are contractors out there who did all sorts of wrong things. They are neither politicians nor officials. So you need to... And my take, that's my personal wish, which I will have until the end, is that as we'll be going through the process, we'll always want to attach activity to individuals. Who did what? If it's Kekan, then we must be able to recommend that criminal charges be laid against Kekan, an individual, and not just make generalized statements because it says nothing. And once the report is adopted by the House, in terms of process, the Speaker writes to the Minister of that department to say, this is what the National Assembly has resolved on. That is the one part. But the other part, at least from our side, which we hope to evoke, is that whenever we have meetings, we have the police, but we already have an in-principle agreement with the NPA to have an official attending our meetings. They are yet to give us a name, who in terms of the NPA Act has the powers to refer to the police for investigation in any case. So I don't think that should be a problem in terms of how do we then practicalize that. I don't see that as a problem. But as an objective, it has to be there. Otherwise, if our objective is just to gather information that does not lead to any course of action, then it doesn't serve any purpose.
There are two issues here. Maybe also those that are working technically, they are guiding us at the same time. There are two issues. There's a criminal charge that must be laid against those implicated. There is also a disciplinary process. So these two, Tim, you were saying we need to have them put in separate sentences. That's the understanding I have. So it must also be reflected on the screen here. Recommend an initiation of a disciplinary procedure against those implicated, and also criminal charges shall be laid against those individuals implicated. I think it suffices.
Ask a technical question. Advocate Jenkins can help. What are the implications of the Powers and Privileges Act for witnesses insofar as them testifying and the use of whatever they say here in a criminal procedure? I just want to understand, because I think the last time we subpoenaed Transnet here, if I heard correctly, the oath has a caveat of some immunity. I'm subject to correction. But at this time, I'm asking just for the sake of clarity, so that you can actually understand the status of that objective in terms of how we go about the level of criminal charges. We don't want to run into a wall where, on one hand, powers and privileges may protect the witnesses, and on the other hand, we are now wanting to go through an objective which says criminal charge. It's just a clarity. If I'm waffling, tell me. I just want to understand proper.
You want to respond to that, Mr. Advocate Chenga?
Thank you, Chairperson. Through you, the Powers and Privileges Act does give immunity to witnesses who have been put under oath. So anything they say or produce or submit during the evidence process or testifying cannot be used against them in court proceedings, of course, except if they have been deliberately misleading Parliament, and that can be used in a case of perjury against them. So should someone give evidence of themselves, that's the first thing. Remember, it connects with, I think it's Section 35 of the Constitution, the right not to incriminate yourself in criminal proceedings. So it is in order if someone gives evidence about somebody else's criminal doings. And that certainly can be used by the NPA, as I understand it, but not against that person themselves. But we get the same within the Criminal Procedure Act, where someone can ask for immunity in a court of law to give evidence that might implicate themselves into a criminal offense, but then that fact may aid the criminal prosecution of another person. So in a motor car vehicle accident, if someone gives evidence of excessive drinking against themselves, they can get some kind of immunity from the NPA, and then someone else might be implicated in that. So there are ways around it, but the main thing with that immunity is for parliaments to get full disclosure. That's why we protect the witness. And nothing stops whether the South African Police Service or the NPA to go and find that evidence elsewhere, not in Parliament, and not what was said in Parliament. So there are various angles that one can look at this thing, but I just want to say the previous question as well, yes, for this committee, in terms of the criminal proceedings and the disciplinary committee, the recommendations must be made, because it's the accounting officer that's responsible for that, and if it's the accounting officer, him or herself being implicated, then it would be the executive authority that must take action against the accounting officer. So that is the sort of purpose of the recommendations, would to say this is your responsibility, executive authority, this is your responsibility, accounting officer, in terms of the Public Finance Management Act. We want to see that this happens, and of course there should be a time frame set to those, but that we deal with when we get there. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, that's straightforward as well, which then takes us to the last proposed terms of reference on the objective. The recovery of money lost where applicable. Again, this is all in the interest of protecting public best. That's what our role gets to be as members of parliament. It's a straightforward one, I guess, even on that one. Are we fine with that? Are we okay with all of those objectives of the inquiry? If any additions? None? Advocate General?
Very small point, Chair, and we've made it before. Again, the recovery of money, we would recommend that the accounting officer institute proceedings to recover that money. I mean, it's not the committee that must go ahead and brief the state attorney to recover money. That's going to cost us money. So we'll make that recommendation where it must be done in terms, again, of the Public Finance Management Act and its regulations. It specifies how it must be done. So it will be in the report.
Unfortunately, we're not going to be able to say everything on those objectives. They are more of a guide in principle. This is what we want to achieve. As to how, those are the issues that Ken Jenkins is making reference to. Okay, thanks for that. If anything else, I take it that we don't have any. We are now moving to the actual terms of reference themselves, which is Section D. Instability and financial management within the department, we find that extent in which to which criminal activities are being perpetuated in the department, or officials charged with disbursement of funds for major water and sanitation projects, we find that as well. Scope, work, and outcome delivery of respective water and sanitation projects on affected citizens, we find that. The non-adherence to key pieces of legislation governing finances.
Can I just check?
Ross,
the point that you wanted to raise, is it not covered in that bullet point?
I thought it was.
Yes. All right.
Chair, here on sanitation projects, I don't know if maybe we can say, stroke infrastructure. Is it the same thing?
Yeah, that should be it. In fact, across all of those that talk about water and sanitation projects, water and sanitation infrastructure projects. Yeah. Mr. Kut?
No, I think your concern is covered in that. In that point, because the project would, in the main, involve laying out of infrastructure. Lay out infrastructure, and then you have to deliver either of water. So I think infrastructure is the actual physical infrastructure, whether it's pipes or dams or whatever. They're all covered. Yeah.
Thanks for that. Non-adherence to key pieces of legislation governing finances and corrupt activities such as the PMFA, National Treasury Regulation, and Prevention of Organized Crime Act. Are we okay with that specific one? Again, that's a straightforward one. Mr. Ross?
Yes, Chairperson, this is relating to the department itself in non-compliance of those legislations. But in terms of the Treasury regulations, where you find in over a period of 5 years where there's gross mismanagement and a persistent breach in terms of financial management, there is an obligation, and let me take this example of National Treasury, to have an intervention in terms of Section 216 and 2 of the Constitution, where they can implement the regulations from Treasury to withhold the funds of that institution. Now, I'd just like also to have a point then in the non-adherence of key legislations by institutions who had the obligation to stop the financial mismanagement in this regard. Now, look, this comes, Chairperson, with the view of 5 years of mismanagement within this entity, a complete collapse of the entity without National Treasury intervening in terms of enforcing Section 216 of the Constitution. So there's also, Chairperson, the point that I'm trying to make, and I wish you, somebody can help to refine me, and perhaps Advocate Jenkins can help me, where we should find that institutions also have an obligation when you find a persistent breach in terms of mismanagement. Why was there not an intervention from those institutions to prevent these issues?
I think I hear your point, and I fully agree with it. But I take it as an ancillary point, because our main point is to check on the department. But as we check on it, then your point comes up. But if this is what has been happening, why has National Treasury not intervened in this way? But in terms of our terms of reference, I think it is a point that is embedded. Yeah, so I don't think it can become a matter of, you know, going into to what extent do you go into detail? I think for me that is the question. But your point is absolutely relevant. But I would say it is embedded in our probing of the department, when the evidence flow and indicate that for all these years this is what has been happening, then that's where you now say, but Treasury regulations allow you, Treasury, to do this. Why have you not? But it is triggered by the initial evidence of what is happening in the department, which is what is going to bring out. Yeah.
Are we covered on that? Okay, then we can move to the departmental disputes on findings of the Auditor General on its 2016-2017 financial year reporting. It's a straightforward one. Okay, Mr. Good.
I just want to find out whether that dispute has it been resolved or not. And maybe you can advise the relevance of having it as an objective or as part of the terms of reference. If it's resolved and becomes superfluous, unless if there are elements that point to a particular behavior, a particular orientation that does need to be interrogated.
Good morning, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members. Insofar as disputes are concerned, just by way of background, Honorable Chairperson, you would recall that the disputes were raised sometime last year, immediately after we issued the audit opinion in August. And then our office embarked on a process where our independent quality assurance unit reviewed the work done and the conduct and the conduct as well of the auditors involved, the specific individual audit members involved in the audit of the trading entity and both the department. The outcome of that process was in favor, or let me not say in favor of the AG, but exonerated the conduct of the auditors and both the factualness of the findings which were raised, which formed the basis for the qualification areas which we reported in the audit report. The department and the entity then in January again reappealed the outcomes process, which then elevated the whole process to the Office of the Deputy Auditor General. That process then required a committee to be established to then do further investigations around the unhappiness. However, as of the 20th of April, We received a letter from the acting accounting officer, Mr. Mkize, where the reappeal was then withdrawn from the office of the AG. However, I would like to put it on record that from the AG's point of view, the office is still continuing with our own investigation process to get finality on the matter, because the withdrawal did not say that they concurred with the findings issued. It merely said we are withdrawing in the interest of building relationships going forward. And therefore, we would like to have finality from the office of the AG in terms of the effectiveness of those outcomes. So our processes are continuing in the background, and the appeals committee is reviewing whatever submissions we have given to them. Because obviously, if an acting person next year, a DG can come and decide they're taking up the process, or another fight can ensue later on. So we want a definitive outcome on the matter and the process. Thank you, Chair, or Chairpersons.
Let me just make a follow-up. I see the reason I raised that question is for us to decide whether we still need that bullet point or not. Because obviously, departments have a right to object to your findings. But for us to follow it up, it should be based on the manner and the extent in which it is raised. That seeks to, or that actually perpetuates the kind of wrong orientation and attitude towards compliance that we see throughout. If that fits in that kind of narrative, then I'm fine with it. But if it was just purely on the basis that they had been persisting, I would say, well, maybe they are within their rights to appeal, except that once the decision is out and the report is in Parliament, I think I've never heard of an appeal after the report had come to Parliament.
Thank you, Chair. I think just...
I guess the main issue there, members, talks to what lies behind that contestation, is what we need to take an interest in. Not so much of whether or not there was contestation. Of importance will be for us to look into the issues related to that. I think that's what is important. So that we're not misdirected in our work and find ourselves confined to, you know, a bureaucratic, you know, exercise of whether you have the right, the department or the executive authority, or you don't have the right, or whether, you know, you still have any issue with that or not. I think of fundamental importance that which is this inquiry will have to deal with should be and must be about the embedded issues. That's where it should really be looked into, having heard and experienced and dealing with these specific matters. Those are some of the issues and the assumptions that the committee we found ourselves having to look into. You want to add? Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Chair. With your permission and indulgence, Chairpersons, I think from our point of view, we agree with the process in terms of, you know, the process being the process. However, if I understand the chairpersons correctly, it is what is behind the what motivated the contestation or the objections which were raised. And from our point of view, it was the fact that whatever work we had conducted was being disputed because it formed the basis for the outcomes in terms of the qualification areas. And the actual extent of the findings which were under dispute, specifically related to the irregular expenditure rate and then the fruitless and wasteful expenditure on particular projects which the AG had selected, where we identified certain potential or indicators of fruitless and wasteful expenditure and overbilling and over-invoicing, etc. So if one then ties the fact that if by disputing the outcomes and you make the outcomes go away, you can potentially then make the findings go away, which deals with the alleged fruitless and wasteful expenditure or over-invoicing and over-pricing in terms of the projects which we reviewed. So in line with the work that's being done here with regard to the financial aspects and financial management with the department, potentially it could tie in with bullet point number one, or if we then want to address the behavior, then we can address the behavior in terms of addressing the consequence management and the non-compliance aspects there too. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, if there are any further comments or questions on this one? I think it's a straightforward one as well. I think the details of what is entailed in such shall have to come up as and when we get to be engaged in our actual work. Okay, in the absence of any, then we shall have to go through to the second last bullet point. May I suggest that so that we don't talk bullet point one and bullet point two, we number those. I think it makes our life easier. If we were to have said it's A or it's H, then there can only be one H. But with so many bullet points, there can be so many without you getting, you can easily get lost, as it were. If we can have A, B, C, or 1, 2, or Roman 1, or Roman 2, and so on and so forth. Perhaps let's then go to second last bullet point, the extent in which the prescripts of the Constitution and the Public Service Administration Act and relevant labor law with its associated amendments underpinning the work of the department in terms of human resource issues, appointment, contract, suspension are adhered to. Mrs. Lissoma?
Chair, thank you, Honorable Chair. I didn't hear earlier on when you introduced this discussion. Are we going to be adopting this terms of reference today? Probably before I go into that.
That's the aim. We brought them here for us to interact with and seek to adopt so that we pave way for us to do what is expected of us, insofar as those objectives of the inquiry are concerned.
Thank you, Chair. Probably let me state my reason is that in terms of DPSA, there is a body, a Chapter 10 institution, which is called the Public Service Commission, that also deals with this issue, but also without raising what I'm supposed to be raising, to take the point that was raised by the Honorable Chair, Honorable Member, can't remember, I said yes, Ross, yes, that you will can indirectly also go to that space if we are not too careful. Because earlier on when I was engaging in terms of your background, as it were, my logic administratively tells me that if you see one and the same behavior for more than two times, then on a third level, it warrants something. You will be running in a space that you are not intending to run in, because it will also question our oversight, robust capabilities, or guts, let me use that word, Chair. But also, I'll leave that one hanging like that without concluding it. Two is that Public Service Commission, because we've got in our committee also this tendency when we see areas where there's a serious offense in that space, whether it's a payment of 30 days payment or non-compliance, as it were, in terms of public service, we ask Public Service Commission to investigate those things. In terms of also the non-compliance in terms of the appointment of the senior executives as it were, also we raised that matter, and there was a letter, but although it was dealing with the senior management as it were, so how then this joint committee intends to deal with the issue that also goes to other institutions that have already done the work, how are you going to bring it? Because I would like us to find a way in a better one sentence to say also we work in collaboration with those, but also mind you, if you're talking about HR spaces and ways, non-compliance and whatever it may be, it's not only this department from where we are sitting as DPSA. Because for us, I would love to see a point where DPSA, as the president also outlined in his journal this year, to say we must look at the structure of the public services in way. That also, that will talk to also the law that governs even the behavior, the culture, and everything in terms of management of the public service forces in way, to deal with that task. To say, how do we then package it and do dealing with it in terms of this department only? Because if there are pockets of those tendencies, but also there's still a need also of re-engineering, so to say, to have a better public services experience, and also identify the legal loopholes. For an example, there's this upline home affairs issue, and also the other one, which I have here, which where the court have pronounced itself in a contradictory way, and how do you then synergize and deal with that one? But it's quite a bigger issue than this one, but my point, driving back home to the closer way, I'm saying that let's find a way where you don't lock yourself as water and sanitation portfolio committee in this space, and end up the other committee and other committees that have got challenged there to have a standalone activity, which are more or less the same because the law that governs public services is so I say that let's get a legal mind in a legal way so that you can allow that space to say this activity, but also we're clear that also we'll monitor it from this side in terms of our time period. Thank you.
You want to comment on that one, Rukel Jenkins?
Thank you, Chairperson. I agree with the Chairperson. If I understand you correctly, we're saying that if this matter revolves around the functions of the Public Service Commission in terms of the HR issues within the Department of Water and Sanitation, then it belongs in your committee because that's the Public Service Commission. They report to your committee. So we must, when we, nothing stops us from investigating what is happening within the Department of Water and Sanitation. We pick up these HR issues. In terms of the law, this belongs in the domain of the Bargaining Council or the Public Service Commission. And then we refer it, I mean, we report to the House that this should be referred to the Public Service Commission, to the Committee on Public Service and Administration. We did that with various other reports on the SABC, I think, where things come up which belongs in other committees. Put it in our report, and we say, look, this needs to go to another committee for further investigation or interrogation. So I think I agree with the Chair.
I think this matter is not different to other matters that we dealt with earlier, wherein we don't have the competency as this committee or as these committees. Those matters are referred elsewhere. I mean, a case that talks to a need at the end of for your law enforcement agencies, precisely because we don't have such a competency. Those must come in an integrated fashion so that you don't have hawks and operating in silos with your SIU and also with your AG's office. All of them must come together and be able to say this is a matter that has to do with the transgression of any law. Similarly with the HR issues, naturally have to be referred to that part of our government agencies. Okay, if any issues still on the last bullet point on page number 2, Mr. Sorry? Last, on page number 2, last bullet point. Did I say anything wrong? Okay. Mr. Ross?
Before we go to the last one, I'm just still on the second last one, and it's with regards to the public service and administration and an issue that might be very important in the Department of Water Affairs, and especially in the trading entities. And this is the point. These officials doing business with the state and the loss for the fiscus in terms of this. Chairperson, I just suspect this is a massive issue within in this department, especially with contracts, etc.
But so my question would be, does it also, and I like your word that you've used, will it also be addressed in an integrated way then when we start questioning people? Or would you like, in terms of a reference point, have a separate point in terms of investigating the extent to which state officials were doing business with the state in this department? Because I just suspect, and my colleague Tim is very good in terms of investigations, I suspect that there's a huge transgression in this regard. Because an advocate Jenkins is here, and he, we've had a talk about this a while ago, and it's only embedded in terms of the where there's actual a deterrent. It's decentralized, and it's only in the regulations itself of public service and administration. There's no national legislation, cohesive national legislation dealing with it. Am I correct? Perhaps you can also assist us. But I think it's an important point, and if you want to establish accountability in terms of misspending of money, I think we need to, perhaps my proposal would be that we have a separate point in terms of this, as terms of reference.
That's another straightforward issue. It talks specifically to officials that are doing business with the government department. Different to the second last point, this is now part of our terms of reference as we pursue our work. You want to have that added as one of those areas? If any comments on that one specifically? It's a straightforward issue. Thank you for that. Thanks, Mr. Ross, for that. Then the last one on that page two, the last bullet point. Compliance and non-compliance by the department to the prescripts of the Constitution. The relevant water pieces of legislation in respect of oversight of efficient and effective water service delivery to all citizens of the country. Any comments? Can you comment, any of the drafters? Just very briefly on that, huh? Are we okay with that? Okay. Can we then go through to page number 3?
No,
Mr. Kekana?
Yeah. I really don't understand what we mean by this bullet point. Because the issue of the Constitution is covered. And also the issue of the Water Act. It is part and parcel of the legislation that we are referring to. I really don't understand what is it that we want to achieve. That is on that particular one. I think you are correct to say maybe the drafters, let them explain to us as to what is it that we want to achieve that is on this particular one.
Quick one from the drafters. You seem to be alone now, Mr. Advocate Jenkins.
Yeah, no, I am, sir. I think it's called something about a bus, under the bus or something. But I'm just putting like. So I think we're now still working with the bullet points, the bullets, yeah, the fourth one. The fourth one and the last one on page two can be either synchronized or merged, because both deals with non-adherence to the regulatory framework, which is exactly what the committee is supposed to be doing. You know, if you read the Constitution, it says that we must maintain oversight over the execution of national executive authority, including the implementation of legislation. So when there's non-compliance or non-adherence to legislation, that is squarely within the mandate of this committee and of Parliament. So I think one can merge those two points, because we're dealing with compliance issues, and the regulatory framework is a pyramid starting with the Constitution at the top and policies and regulations at the bottom, and in the middle we get the various pieces of legislation, whether it's the Public Service Act, the Public Finance Management Act, National Water Act, etc., etc. So we can all put that into one category, I think, Chair, and deal with it. And as I said in my sort of summary right at the beginning, there should be an audit committee report on these issues as well, to deal with issues of non-compliance. There should be reports on whether there has been compliance. There should be a way. Also, the Auditor General, of course, can. Is exactly what the Auditor General also look at. What are the indicators we're using? And are there indicators? Are there reliable indicators? So even if there is compliance, what's the quality of that report that says there's compliance? But that's, I mean, again, the committee itself will rely on other reports. We don't have the capacity to go in there and do the audit ourselves. So we will look at the Auditor General and we look at the Audit Committee's reports, annual reports, etc. Thanks, Chair.
Okay, can we just have a quick look at the proposals? Okay, whilst we're busy with that, Mr. Good.
Yeah, so I think that last bullet point is about service delivery. Actually, that last bullet point is similar to bullet point 3 from the top, which talks to what Ross was concerned about. So we rather either remove bullet point 3 and leave that last bullet point as it is, because all it is saying is all these things, how are they impacting on the delivery of services to people on the ground?
So we're collapsing bullet point 3 as in C.
Chairperson, yes, those are the two bullet points that, and I think Mr. Gordy, our chairperson, is correct, but I would like to collapse it. I wonder if we can't just merge it, because I quite like the wording, the scope, worth, and outcome delivery of respective water projects. These talks to projects, on, and the other one talks to service delivery. Just merge it so that we can keep it as wide as open, because ultimately I think we need to thoroughly discuss in our inquiry the outcome in terms of service delivery for citizens. But if you want to collapse it, if you think it's not necessary, I'll rest my case. Or we're merging or collapsing.
Bullet point 2 still does talk to disbursement of funds for major water and sanitation infrastructure projects. They can only be for service delivery. No other objective at all. Which would then mean that bullet point number 3, easily without that project, is collapsed into that other bullet point. You're fine with that? Yeah, I guess that's where the issue is. The detail is what is important when we are engaged, you know, with our, you know, expected work, as it were.
I collapse it then in terms of our purpose to simplify the terms of reference.
Okay, Mr. Good.
Yeah, no, I think we can on the last bullet point, in respect of oversight of efficient and effective water project and service delivery. So we just add project, so it's a project and service delivery. So it is directly covered in relation to projects, as separate from your general delivery of water services.
You see another dynamic in this equation. Is the responsibility of a department called Water and Sanitation. Whilst it is said to be Water and Sanitation Department, insofar as our constitution is concerned, your reticulation belongs to a local municipality. which leaves the department with the one major responsibility of providing bulk services. So if we can be able also to be specific, so that there is no assumption that anything and everything that is to do with water service delivery is in that door of that department. So that there is no confusion going forward. Not sure whether I'm clear on this specific one. Mrs. Lesson?
You are clear, Chair, because on that point it will help us, because I was looking at the vehicles that the Water and Sanitation Department uses in terms of providing bulk water, as it were. The water board close to me. Okay. I'm agreeing with your point, that's one. Two is that in my head I was thinking that we must also accommodate the water board. Not in terms only, I can see the other bulletin in the page 3 that gives it their processes of appointment and all those things, but also in terms of provision of bulk water, as it were, because the department uses them as the vehicle also to provide water, bulk water, to municipalities. So I'm saying that we should craft that one to accommodate those institutions that the department uses. I know there's a coastal management and all these other ones. Any other relevant bodies that the department works with in supplying bulk water? Because it's an overspeed in terms of the challenges as well. Thank you.
Yes, my concerns were also with regards to bulk. So if you want to add bulk, to confine it to bulk supply, which is, that's the area that I'm also focusing on.
And perhaps if we can also be more specific as well on bullet point number 2, apologies that we have to go to and fro. Just being reminded by Mrs. Lesoma, the extent to which criminal activity are being perpetuated in the department and other water entities. Does it make sense? The water entities here will take into account your water boards and your TCTA in the form of Trans-Caledon Tunnel Authority. So those are your water entities that one is making. Of course, in bracket, you shall have to make mention that it's water boards and Trans-Caledon Tunnel Water Authority. Mr. Basson? And Water Research Commission. Does it come out clear? In other words, on bullet point number 2, it talks about department and all the water entities in bracket, water boards, Trans-Caledon Tunnel Authority, and also Water Research Commission.
Chairperson, what about the CMAs?
Yeah.
The water catchment areas.
Those boards as well.
We need to include them as well.
Include CMAs, catchment management agencies, and also irrigation boards. It helps to mention. Okay, we are mentioning those in bracket, all as part of your water entities. So in future, when we talk about water entities, we're talking, making reference to all of those, or any one of those, rather. Okay, we're fine with page number 2. We are now on page number 3, there on top, bullet point 1 on top. We are now not talking about bullet points, but insofar as our documents are concerned. But on the board there, it's number H on the screen out there. Any comments on H? We have got bullet points from H to M. No, wait. To L, sorry. It's a straightforward one again. That talks to the status of our water boards. I. Investigate the influence of external stakeholders in allocation of water and sanitation projects, infrastructure projects. Straightforward one. J. Interrogate legal, financial, and social aspects of directives issued to water boards on to undertake work on behalf of the Department of Water and Sanitation and the nomination of board members. Straightforward. K. Interrogate. Okay.
Okay, just because in terms of the first bulletin on page 3, I've numbered it to be 8, to say that the issue of board appointments and all that is covered. So in terms of the is it J, you said J, ne? It's 10. Then you end where it says that Department of Water and Sanitation, full stop, because and the nomination of the board is up there, already covered.
Thanks for that. So it ends, that sentence with J ends there with water and sanitation, on behalf of water and sanitation. K. Interrogate the compliance by the department to relevant labor law and regulation. L, which now is K, challenges the relation related to concurrent functions of water services at a national and local level. Yeah, we're deleting that one. I want to assume that we're also even deleting on this specific one as well, because the very last bullet on page number 2 talks about compliance and non-compliance of department to the prescripts constitution relevant piece of legislation in respect of oversight of efficient and effective water service delivery. So that's a repetition of that. Because effectively that concurrent function in that piece of legislation expected shall also talk to this concurrent pieces of legislation, and also delineation of duties insofar as national responsibility and local government responsibility on bulk and reticulation. Are we fine with that? Doing away with that and then have it all collapse into that last bullet point on page 2 that talks about pieces of legislation. They are mentioned the Water Act and Water Services Act. Okay, there you have your terms of reference that we seemingly are agreeing upon. Are we okay with all of those before we move further? That's the bulk of what is expected of us here. So we really need to be quite sure. And are we okay? We fine? Once we adopt out of here, it is work expected of us. Okay, let's talk about the scope insofar as the time frames are concerned. that immediately takes us to the scope and the issues which are elsewhere. Can we then agree that we shall have to deal with that at that point, whether you begin at 2012 or you talk about five financial years and so on and so forth? Can we agree with that, Mr. Person?
Chairperson, let's just build in a caveat here for us that if something comes up that is prior 2012, that we can deal with that matters as well.
Yeah, that's a straightforward one. Just a caution on for our own sake. Otherwise, we shall have to be toing and froing and having to do any such amendments and addendums. Okay, we now on procedure, which is the last part.
Let's talk about this point, that if something comes up that happened before 2012, we should also look at that. I think it is problematic. In terms of the terms of reference, you will have to have a period that these are the issues that we are dealing with. Because if we are going to deal with almost everything, it is going to be problematic. My view is, let's agree on the 2012, that is the 5-year period that we are referring to, and nothing that is beyond that.
Chairperson?
Mr. Posa?
The problem within the department is when they do projects, it's multi-year projects. So it could mean that corruption started in 2010. It's a project that goes into 2012, but the corruption already started in 2010 because it's multi-year projects. Then we cannot deal with the matter. Even if it's in 2012, we cannot deal with it because it happened in a previous financial year. And we've got to cater for that because almost all projects in this department is multi-year projects.
Any further comments? Mr. Mguni, not yet? Tim?
Chairperson, thank you very much and morning. You know, when we try to open a scope very wide, you end up not finishing it. And you will end up, you see, having to call the whole country now, the entire country now, because the department has been having many people which have been, you see, falling throughout the way. But it will be better. I understand what of the issue of the multi-year project, which is very, very true. There are some of the projects started a long, long time ago, which are not even yet finished, so some of them are kept being postponed. But I would appreciate if we can have a specific time. If any member says it couldn't be 2012, can we be specific and say this time? And if we don't come with the time, then we'll keep to this 2012. Thank you very much.
Obviously, it would be an exaggeration if one was to make an example of Mzimbubu Dam. That project started in 1961. As I said, obviously it would be an exaggeration in terms from where I'm seated. I think it shall help us. Sorry, Tim?
Chair, thank you. Chair, I just want to try and find an elegant compromise. Honorable Basson has referred to multi-year contracts. So if we go from 2012 until now, obviously if we're dealing with a contract that was in function or in operation in 2012 or 2013, but it stretched back to 2010, we'll obviously look at that contract as a whole, won't we? Anyway, we won't look at half of it. So if we're dealing with a matter that straddles those two time periods, straddles the 2012 starting point, then obviously we will focus on the matter anyway. I can't see this committee saying, right, here's an issue, and we can only look at half of it because it was 2012 onwards. We'd look at the whole thing, surely. and the fact that it may drag back a bit further back than that as well. And I also think that the time frames here is fairly relaxed, actually. It says the time frames will depend on the issues under investigation. So I think I would say we adopt this. But as a committee, we agree, as a joint committee, we agree that we'll try and stick to 2012 onwards. But it will be dependent on the issues under investigation. I'm sure none of us here want to do an incomplete job.
Chair, let me agree with what Tim is saying. I think for the purposes of our own understanding here, and if it must be noted somewhere, then it must, that if a multi-year project in one way or the other finds itself touching 2012, then it's subject to investigation. And I think the caveat that's there to say that it's dependent upon issues also helps. But what I was going to suggest is that we must also not try to be jacks of all trades in this investigation and try and do everything. It may be that at the end of it, we'll find that there's a need for an investigation into the multi-year projects themselves separately. I think let us confine ourselves to the issues that arose, particularly in the recent financial years, which actually led us with the situation. And then at some other point in time, should it be, then do these multi-year project investigations thoroughly, more focused away from this. I think, in fact, this investigation, which this inquiry rather, will give rise to that. So I think let's leave this as it is here so that we know where we are going. Otherwise, so Pindang 1961, I wasn't even there. That would be very unfair.
All right. No, it's fine, comrade. Actually, we're not in disagreement. We're all in agreement. It's just a question of we have to be firm. We're clear. It's the last 5 years. But of course, if something goes 2 months back into 2011, do you say, no, this is now out of... No, you don't. That would be mechanical. So I think we're all in agreement about what we need to do.
Okay, if that is fine, and of course the specifics insofar as the issues are concerned are in a separate submission, which we'll still have to deal with separately. Which then,
Chair, before we pass, I think let us just have that paragraph redrafted. It can't start with that line. Must start with the last one. It says the time frame is 5 years from 2012. However, and then you put the caveat. You don't start with the caveat and then put the time frame. Start with the time frame is 5 years. Full stop. However.
Mrs. Lusuma? And bring your mic quite closer.
No, thank you, Honorable Chair. I would like to make an appeal from DPSA point of view, since we have been invited, which we really appreciate the invite. Is there any chance, I'm putting a proposal in a question form, that we be forwarded the whole terms of reference? What is it? Just see what is written. Okay. The draft terms of reference for reflection and go through in terms of, because even the wording also, whatever word that you use is legally binding, so that we can look at it, because some of my colleagues from the committee as well, they are not even here, they have apologized, and well understanding also why they have apologized, but to say, is there any in terms of your time that we can allow us to look at the final draft and then come back jointly then and adopt it? The appeal from my side, Chairperson. Thank you. Because I still have to also to consult our portfolio through the legal advisor, parliamentary legal advisor also. How do we then, as DPSA, play our meaningful role in this space? Thank you, Chair.
Okay, let's come back to that later. Can we just perhaps go through the procedure so that we can be safely saying to ourselves, we now have one document that is now ready for all of us to go through, if we are okay with that, which is sensible in my view, we then give each other, you know, a few days before we come and finally adopt these terms of reference, which will give us way for us to begin to say, when do we then begin our with our work. Let's just look at the procedure. Mr. Chairperson?
Chairperson, on that last bullet, could we just take out the 5 years? Because if you look at 2012-13 till today, you know, we are already in the
which seventh... Which bullet are you referring to?
On the time frames.
Oh, yeah.
Because okay. if you use 2012 to 13 till where we are now, it's 7 years. Seven financial... We are in the seventh yeah. financial year. So just take out the 5 years and start with the 2012-13.
No, that makes sense. 2012 to 2018, is it, yeah. Okay, any comments on procedure? Joint inquiry will be conducted as follows. Ma'am Shapshula?
Chairperson, I was just writing what Honorable Bassoni say. Maybe if, I just want to, so that we are on one, just want to check the 7 years against 20, against 5 years. Because here is 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19. Oh, yeah, but it's 6.
Yeah, yeah, those are the details that we shall get in the final draft. Okay, can we then proceed straight to...
I'm just
procedure.
Afraid of these 7 years. I think Honorable Bassoni just
yeah,
wants to stretch.
Again, those are the details. The drafters, they know exactly how many years. Advocate Jenkins, being under the bus, I'm correct when I say the final arbiter is yourself insofar as the test is concerned, am I right? Which will come back to us for final ratification or adoption, if you like. As to how many years, 5 years, 7 years, you shall do the calculation. Thank you. There will be an overarching evidence leader. Tim.
Chair, I just want to, just help me if I'm wrong here, but I just think that we need to maybe expand slightly the role of the overarching evidence leader. Our understanding was that evidence leader would lead evidence in general on a particular focus area and then allow the members who were in that focus area to then interrogate. Should we not put that in here? So there'll be an overarching evidence leader, comma, who will lead evidence in general on the focus area, and then second bullet point, the members allocated to that focus area will then conduct interrogation or questioning, whatever you want to put it, for an end period or so, something like that. Just to give it some sort of structure in terms of procedures, so we get that sorted out right in the beginning. And then maybe even a third bullet point saying such questioning by the members will be conducted in a cross-examination style. Because we said we wanted to adopt the SCOPA style here so that we can really get people to answer questions and not try and slip away. So I don't know if we can formulate that. Just a little bit of an extra there and just two extra bullet points. Do you feel that level of detail is required at this point or not?
Chair, comments on that?
Yes, Chair, I'd like to support that proposal. It is, we have to structure it and then have a thorough interrogation and then also in terms of a question and answer session. I think it would be very useful. It will save a lot of time, and structuring it into certain areas of expertise, that would also be excellent.
Okay, that seems to be quite a straightforward one, though I must say it it bogs us down to details. Whether we want those details here, that's what is running to mind. Mrs. Shura?
Chair, in agreement with what Honorable Tim has said, I just want to suggest something on what you are just saying, that we can't be sitting here, all of us, and do the issue of who's on focus areas. I think the two of you as chairpersons and your team will be able to know, because I think in SCOPA we already know we've got groups, so different people are there. So in terms of who's leading what, who's doing what, you can decide on your own in terms of the participation at our different committees, rather than to sit here maybe and maybe we can just discuss the preface to say in terms of focus areas. But to say now we allocate this one and this one, let us give it to you as the chairperson to deal with.
Chairperson?
Mr. Ross?
I thought we had consensus on that already. I think we've discussed it in a lighter tone in the last meeting, that the chairpersons will dedicate specific areas and spokespersons.
Thanks for that. Let's again look into the specific areas that relate to what is it that is expected of us to do going forward, hence the procedure. The first one is we are agreed that we need to have this one evidence leader. If you can just perhaps deal with that specific one, and then dispense on that one as to, yeah. Mr. Godi, you can also just respond to that as well.
Just a minute. I agree with what you said. When I'm done, you can say it. But I wanted to make a suggestion, comrades. Tim. Yeah, before she arrives, I just want to make a suggestion, you know, because the word we have is evidence leader. But my preference, comrades, will be for us to have that person called evidence leader to do more of a mopping up operation. I would prefer that members of parliament would actually lead the interrogation. So if we're a focus area, it is members who start the process. When they are done, the evidence leader should be able to check if there are areas and issues that might have been left out. Then he or she can come in. I want processes that are led by members of parliament than the other way around. Because what I've seen, they tend to be more caught process-like. But I'll find very tedious too, but rather if we have somebody who can be able to listen, and if there are areas that we have missed, can then come in and just make sure that everything is tied down. I don't know what we'll call him if we agree on that, but I'll prefer that members of parliament actually take the lead.
That's a concrete proposal. We're fine with that. And that person who shall be called that evidence leader, having to have his or her own team of admin, I would imagine, that assists him or her in pulling things together, giving us some way forward which we must discuss and agree upon. Are we fine with that approach? Which effectively would mean that the chairpersons expected from the respective committees shall be taking the process, with members engaging on all of these aspects expected, and having to have that person call him or her an evidence leader, for lack of a better one. We take it from there. That's a concrete proposal, Mr. Person.
Chairperson, in our first meeting, we decided to team up people. one from SCOPA and one from the department, and they are in a team and they would lead.
Those are the details that we spoke and agreed upon. And they're not far from what Tim was saying earlier as to how we do it in groups and, you know, focal areas and those details. What we're agreeing upon now is that the chairpersons must sit down and begin to say, we have these groups that we're going to have, that are going to lead these respective areas. So that's what we are agreeing upon. Tim?
I think maybe in the process of, because obviously you are, as chair, is going to control process throughout this commission. So I think if you could just give some time to, not now, but in your deliberation of who you'd like to work on which focus areas, exactly how it's going to work. And I mean, for instance, in SCOPA, if somebody is a specialist in the area, just an example, the chair would maybe allow them 45 minutes or half an hour, an hour, to lead the initial line of questioning and then allow members to ask follow-up questions, and then maybe our evidence mopper-upper, whatever that is termed. But if you could just work out that process, I think it's important to have that sort of process in place so that it causes us to be disciplined. If somebody knows they're going to lead questioning as a member, they know they've got half an hour, they need to ask their best 10 questions and not sit and waffle and make long speeches and declarations and that sort of thing. Put the person on the other side of the table under pressure.
Thank you.
I think that discipline is important. Chair, the other thing I'd just like to ask is a minor concession. I fully agree with my colleagues that yourselves as the chair should appoint who deals with the FERC area. But if there's any member here who has a specific knowledge and interest in and expertise in a particular one of these focus areas, that they be allowed to approach you and say, look, on this, I'm really clued up. I know my stuff.
Thanks.
So we don't lose any possible expertise like that.
Okay. Can we then finalize the procedure? Witnesses need to be identified by the committee, can be subpoenaed to attend at the designated time and place as provided, and so on and so forth. Public representatives and civil society organizations will be given an opportunity to make submission.
Let's go back to the third bullet point.
Third bullet point?
Yeah. Advocate Jenkins, I want a legal opinion, not so much a political opinion. Our sentence there say witnesses can. Would it not be helpful for us to say all witnesses will be subpoenaed? I'm looking at the situation where witnesses who have been subpoenaed are under oath, and there is a legal weight on their heads to give evidence with a clear understanding that if they misrepresent facts or if they mislead the inquiry, there are consequences than if they're just invited. When people are invited, I think there is less obligation. It actually, it's up to them to decide whether they accept the invitation or not. I'm just trying to check if others will be subpoenaed, others will be invited, if we don't say they will all be subpoenaed, so they all operate under the same conditions.
Thank you, Co-Chairperson.
If you can also maybe, I saw it somewhere where we shall be expected to advertise. I'm thinking now about witnesses being identified by the committee. You have those that are going to come but not being invited by the committee, your whistleblowers among others, people out there in the public who might be having information, who would want to come, and if you can also comment on that as well.
Thank you, Chair. The rules provide for any witness to be put under oath, which will then have the legal effect of the immunity we discussed earlier. Whether you are under oath or not under oath, and whether you've been invited or subpoenaed to come, you're not allowed to intentionally mislead Parliament. That in itself is a criminal offence. Certainly, subpoenaing all the witnesses brings everybody on the same level, which is sort of a clear-cut issue. How I understand this specific inquiry we're embarking on, that there might be people who are, for lack of a better word, non-officials or private persons. There might be former director generals or former officials in the department. They will probably, or they may say, well, we're not under an obligation unless we subpoena it. And then we must go through that process of getting permission from the speaker, having a resolution in the committee, which is not a problem. We can have a list of witnesses. We can resolve to subpoena them all and submit them as a group to the speaker to say, this is the people we want to get before the committee. And we've done that in the other investigations that Parliament is doing. So that can be done. It's not necessary to subpoena a Director General because they are constitutionally obligated to appear before Parliament and to answer questions. But certainly we can do it just to keep, for lack of, again, a lack of a better word, parity with all the witnesses. But it's not critical, it's not legally necessary to subpoena someone to come here. We just put them under oath and we explain to them, even in the invitation letter one can explain what the purpose is and what kind of inquiry this is and what the scope of the inquiry is and what is expected of the witness to him or her will have to disclose during questioning. I think that's also an important part, so that they can come prepared. And we don't get the answer, well, that happened 5 years ago, I can't remember, or I need to go and consult documents, I will give you a written answer, or something like that. So, it's a bit, I'm jumping all over the place, Chairperson, but I think, one, nothing wrong with subpoenaing all of them, but we don't have to. Two, all witnesses should be put under oath, so we will have to do that right at the beginning, at the start of of the inquiry of the specific witness. And as I say, the rules provide for that, what the chairperson must do to put that person under oath. And then with the consequences that follow from that, either the evidence leader or the chairperson can just quickly set that out in less than a minute for the witness, just to remind them that they are, in terms of the law, obligated to answer all questions put to them lawfully. And if they do not comply, they need to have a valid legal reason why they don't want to comply with that request. And failure to answer or failure to stay in attendance while they are under cross-examination or being questioned is a criminal offense. So I think that's also an important part of the sort of introduction when the witness starts with their testimony. Thank you, Chair. Sorry, Chair. Your question, I don't think I've answered that one.
Yeah, go ahead.
Can you repeat it, sir? Can you just repeat it?
This talks pretty much to, you see how it is put here, talking about procedure. The witnesses are identified by the committee. In your program, you also are going out in public, inviting whoever else, so that as part of our own process, whether it is covered in the program itself, so therefore there's no need to talk about it. This talks about some other witnesses that are going to come, call them whistleblowers or any other name, but they shall be expected to come before and be taking oath and all of that.
Yes, Chair. I think it would be wise to be put under oath if they're going to put anything out there that could affect their own liability for saying something that someone might want to litigate against them themselves. I mean, we have whistleblower protection legislation in South Africa, and certainly that will come into play, but a member of the public that gives evidence before a committee is not covered by parliamentary privilege. So putting them under oath will protect them against self-incrimination at least. So that's quite a substantive protection that they get, so we can do that as well. That would, just because of the nature of the engagement with the committee, it will be more informal. I think when we're talking about specific director generals that gives testimony, I think that would be a more formal process to say, look, we're going to put you under oath. The witness one can say, look, here's the oath. You understand that what you say must be the truth. You have to answer the questions, or you can give us your submission, and you will be protected because you are now covered by the oath. Do you accept that? Yes, fine. Okay, let's roll. If you can understand that, sure. Thanks.
Okay. Mr. Kekana, noted, Mr. Bosco.
Chair, on bullet point two, I think to accommodate what you're saying, my proposal would be to remove identified by the committee. We simply say witnesses will be invited to provide evidence. That covers all the witnesses, whistleblowers and everybody.
Yes, sir. Mr. Pazan?
Chairperson.
Okay. Members, I think that shall then take us to, if there are no other additional areas for procedure going forward, that shall then take us straight to the issues themselves, which shall take care of your time frames, among others. Are we fine with that? We have all of us this document. Okay, draft guidelines on the scope of inquiry. The joint committee that pulls together both water and sanitation, SCOPA, and have since invited Public Service and Administration Committee. So the three committees are expected to work together in dealing with all the issues identified, both in the objectives of what is expected of this entire exercise. What are the issues? Page one. The document provides key focal areas as well as brief scope of the for the joint inquiry of the Department of Water and Sanitation. It also provides a suggested list of possible witnesses that can appear and provide evidence, which will be incorporated into the terms of reference once approved and adopted.
Yeah, I think on the scope, the second bullet point, it says focus on consequence management and recovery. I think we should add focus on root causes, individuals, consequence management and recovery. We need to pin all cases of commission and omission to specific people, to specific individuals, so that we don't generalize. Say there were problems in the department. People did not follow process. Who are those people? So I think I just wanted to end that on page one. Otherwise, I'm quite happy with that first point on financial. If I can take it to the second page.
Are you fine with that?
Yeah, I'm saying if I can take it to the second page.
On the same issue?
Yeah, on the same issue.
Okay.
Of financials. If you go to deviations, on the scope it says assessment and evaluation of deviations and expansions, especially those that have not been approved by National Treasurer. I want to suggest that let's remove especially those not approved by National Treasurer. We are interested in all deviations, even those that were approved by National Treasurer, because you sometimes have problems with those very approvals by National Treasurer.
Okay. We are still on page 1 and 2.
Can we just change the first bullet on the scope since 2012-13 financial year to date?
Straightforward. Mr. Ross?
Just to make it easier for us in terms of the presentation and the finances, if I can make the proposal that we have a comparative analysis done by perhaps the AG or our research teams in terms of the different years. Let me take irregular expenditure that we have is in columns, this year, that year, and so forth. It will make it very much easier in terms of doing a comparative analysis and in terms of the questioning. If it's possible, I don't know who put the hand up to do this for us, either the AG or our research teams. Thank you.
Are we fine with that? In principle? AG, you want to comment? Easy stuff.
Thank you, Chairperson. So with a formal request that we receive from the committee, certainly we'll assist where we can. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. Co-Chair?
No, I just wanted to say, because if we do that on this point, then on every other point that we may come to, I thought once we agree on the topic, the question of how we collate information is going to be a separate process, which we may not necessarily have to deal with here. So that in the other bullet points, we must not have the same request. We'll deal with how we collect information after we've agreed on the points themselves.
My proposal was specifically towards the financial bullet point.
To the financial? Mr. Ross? Okay, mumbling. It's allowed. That shall have been dealing with the financial area of work expected of us. In other words, we're dealing with the focal areas. Are we having any additions on that financial aspect of our focal areas? Are we okay? Are we fine? Are we going to remind each other after? Okay, it's fine. And let's go on. Okay.
Just a minute.
Mm-hmm.
Am I missing something, comrades, here on, because I see irregular expenditure. I'm not seeing fruitless and wasteful expenditure. I see unauthorized expenditure. I don't see fruitless and wasteful expenditure. Can it be added there?
Did I understand you quite well, Mr. Ross, when you are saying that we also, as we talk about work expected of us, the comparative analysis figures also be factored into this whole? I'm looking and I'm listening to the co-chair here talking about fruitless and wasteful expenditure. Whether those figures shall come as and when we do our work, or should we have them here as a guide? There are a number of deviations, there are a number of accruals, there are a number of duplicate payments of service providers. Yes, sir.
I think what we sought to do today was to agree on the focus areas. And what the technical team has done with key issues was to actually break it down and give us a sense. So I think that should be enough for today. What Ross asked for is what should happen to all the other topics once we've agreed on, in terms of the actual details that must enable
those who would have been allocated to do their work.
Okay, thanks. So we're dealing with the principles here. We are agreed on having to do away with especially the deviations by National Treasury on scope. We have added the on the fruitless and wasteful expenditure. Are we okay? If we can just add the overdraft. Oh yeah, I can see.
Chair?
Yes, madam?
I'm back. If I may check, where this point is going to be accommodated, I'm trying just to page through quickly. But I hope it's within the space in terms of the internal systems of your audit committee and risk, as it were. Because also we want also to establish the root causes of that, which is more of the system issues. Even declarations of interest also is within that space. So is it covered here or is it too detailed? Because if you don't look at the systems as well, you might also not rescue the situation moving forward.
It should be a matter still under finance as well, and it's a necessary point that we are raising, which talks about the internal controls within the department. So the risk, yeah. So it must be added.
Why didn't you say internal controls? So that it, yeah, more broader than just audit committee.
What is, where are we now? Oh yeah, budgeting. Okay. No, that's fine. Thanks for that, Mr. Slisoma. On human resource management, if any issues.
Probably we need to, because earlier on also we promised ourselves that we also want to appreciate the root causes, whether it's a political interference or don't know political interference, but to find out the root cause and implications of the appointment of permanent DGs as the turnover is very hard, because it could be a legal matter, it could be the relationship between the two, or whatever, that you can also even rescue that one in that form, instead of just saying the status, because you get the status and then so what after that, because you want also to remedy the situation moving forward.
Okay.
No, I think,
Coach?
Yeah, I think maybe let's just rephrase it. Instead of say status of the appointment of permanent DG, I'm trying to think what we should say, because the issue is instability and the scope of, I think maybe the scope should be the period within which we're checking, because we're saying there was instability in leadership from your DG, your CFO, and other senior officials. So what are you checking? You are checking within this time period because you've had four DGs in 4 years. That's what you're trying to check. I'm not sure if there's any other pertinent detail than the fact that you have had instability, and you want to check what are the root causes of
this instability.
Talking about whether or not permanency of DG, so you're talking about the root cause. So it's not confined to the DG per se. I guess that's the essence of. Okay, I think that makes sense. The approved DDG structure is 9 position. What is this? Well, the actual personnel is 8. That talks to the key issue. Okay, the approved DDG
structure. Should we say the approved DDG structure, or should we talk about the organogram? I think it's better if you talk about the organogram. That would include the issue of the DDGs. The DDGs. Yes.
So we're talking about the organogram and the qualifications.
Yes.
A specific relation to senior management, if we can say it that way. Because if you say then just organogram, then you're talking to the whole structure of the department. So maybe you could just give it a specific to say to the senior management, then as well as the, what is it, the financial, I don't know, but yeah.
Mr. Bazaar?
Maybe we should make it easier, Chairperson, the organogram from the Director General to Director's position.
Do we want to take us that far? Mr. Kuti?
Yeah, well, if we want to expand it, then let's agree. But if we want to properly put what is already on paper, I will agree that the key issue is, because yeah, the key issue is the DDGs, the number of DDGs, which talks to the organogram. So if you say organogram, that is what you want to focus on, but what is the scope? Your scope is your senior management or your DDGs. That is what you want to talk to. And it's yeah, you want to focus on your DDGs as the scope in the organogram. But he's suggesting that you take it to the director's level. And I'm saying that is a decision we can take.
Mr. Bosan?
Chairperson, why I say director's level is we know that the bucket irrigation problem, with all the problems we have, the person that deals with that within the department is the director. Guy that was suspended and then just brought back again. And that's why I said, maybe we will only focus on one or two directors, but I think it gives us the leeway to open it and so that you can pull in people on that level as well and see whether they qualify to do the work, where they get billions of rands to spend and we don't know what that person's qualifications is.
I would speak from both sides of my mouth, unfortunately, but to be clear, to say that let's agree for the purpose of this activity or program. To say we'll focus on senior management. Mind you, the other issues in terms of the lower level, automatically, ordinarily, your public service commission, your all that, because you don't want in any event having unintended consequences of agreeing indirectly to review the whole structure, the organogram of water and sanitation, because the moment you go there, but by default they will bring themselves, but you don't need to go to that level, because in terms of your role of your oversight also goes to a certain level, as it were. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. What I would propose we do, Mr. Bason, We do have a section that shall be expected to deal with a whole range of other projects. As we do that, we shall also have to, if you like, touch on some of the areas you're making reference to. But the interest for now, insofar as this area is concerned, talks pretty much to the stability or lack thereof of the department, especially at senior management level. Otherwise, if we take it to directors, we might just find ourselves literally hunting literally everything that is found in that zoo. Mr. Basson?
I agree. I will withdraw my proposal.
Okay, thanks for that understanding. And also the rephrasing of the scope. Just repeat the way consequence management and financial implications appointed, appointment of additional posts. Approved organogram and qualification. At senior management level, instead of, are we okay? Do away with the 9 positions and GDGs and whatnot. Maybe just suffice to say at senior management level.
Chair,
yeah.
Can I, Google? Approved organogram and qualifications at senior management. That's fine. Then when you go to the scope, that's where you must now talk about the appointment, qualifications, okay, appointment and number of DDGs, because then you are looking at those numbers in relation to the organogram.
Okay, that takes us, of course, we shall have that penned down as well with time. Recruitment process, including verification, vetting of officials. Okay, that's a straightforward one. On page 3, sorry, there on top, the middle, you know, there's something that I don't know what the AG's office might wish to say on this one. There's something that we've been pursuing with the department about its policy on what is referred to as a restraint of trade. I'm not sure if there is no policy, whether you then, perhaps it could be forming part of your recommendations at the end. But if there is such a policy, especially when it comes to your officials leaving job today, tomorrow, they have a huge project of the department. Clearly there is, it is what is called insider trading. And they also call it names, you know, throwing off the javelin. It's something that is of serious importance. It doesn't only, or it's not really confined only to this department, I must say. It should be a government-wide issue of concern. The policy on restraint of trade. Once you leave this department or this government agency, you only have 5 years, type of a situation within which you have your cool-off period. But I've been asking the department, I haven't had, you know, any response. I don't know what is the situation in other departments.
Generally, Chair, in terms of public service, as it were, there's no legal issue that says that there must be a cooling off period, as it were. but I know that in terms of our committee also we raised that one, that the DPSA must deal with that one as well. But currently nothing. That's why we're able to recycle them every day.
In my view, we should really have a recommendation to that effect, because we are at a loss at the end. I mean, you have them recycled. If anything wrong found on this specific official, you know, easily goes to another department or in other provinces. It's anyway, any further issues, perhaps that is parked somewhere.
Mm-hmm. I'm requesting that in terms of the second box, that we delete the second one on page 3 at the top. Recruitment process and all that, and qualification expertise and all that, it's one and the same thing. It's just the activities that are within that. Then you are focused on recruitment policy as well as vetting. Verification of qualifications also is part of those activities that you check, even stopping recycling, whatever it is. So we take out that next column line, I mean to say. I'm suggesting change. Thank you so much.
Mr. Chula?
Well, actually, I just wanted to make you at ease that if you pursue that matter from your in your portfolio committee, it will help. Because in our relation in terms of SCOPA, where you have officials who decide to resign today from the same department and come to do business with the same department. So you can see it's an arranged thing. So it's quite of a problem, which I think both portfolio committees and as much as especially the DPSA one should follow up on it, so that you bar people. Because if the person is working in the supply chain management, decide to resign and also do business tomorrow and get that tender score, know everything, is a problem. It's kind of a corruption relationship that is going on, and it's really creeping in.
Technical team, I'm sure they are listening, and perhaps these are some of the issues that should form part of our recommendations at the end of the day. Okay, we now move straight to, we've taken note of some of the issues raised on the middle column that talks to key issues. Where we talk about recruitment processes and qualification and conflict of interest for public officials. Oops, she's gone. Okay. I thought this machine is on autopilot.
No, Chair, we are also saying on conflict of interest and public officials. We are collapsing that into one. Because obviously, the conflict of interest and public officials, you'll pick that up when you're doing the vetting.
Okay, Madia, you shall assist with that redrafted thingy. Ne?
I think the issue on the conflict of interest, I would wish that we leave that sentence to be there. It is too strong to be subsumed anywhere else, because it has its own independent processes and procedures in terms of declaration of interest, but also in relation to the issues around, you know, doing business with the state by officials, whether it is before the Act or after the Act. But I think I would wish that that part be left there and not be subsumed anyway.
Which then takes us straight to the scope of activity related to that very same issue about the conflict of interest of public officials. That is a matter for focus. But the scope then talks about
senior management and also senior, what we call supply chain management officials. That's the experience out there. The AG's office has been directing us to. Okay, so the only areas that are going to be collapsed are your areas that relate to verification and vetting. Sorry, and also your qualification by your senior officials or officials within the department. Okay, going straight now to infrastructure projects, contract management and project management. The areas having been identified there are those that we see: Giani, Limpopo, Mubani Emergency Project, Mamitwa. Oops. Nwamitwa Dam. That word confuses me all the time. Zanin Dam, Northern Nskazi Bulk Water, Northern Water, Daung, Lesotho Highland Water. Other projects include Krizani Water Project and Glen William Dam. There may be others as well. As and when those are discovered, the scope is to be identified accordingly, and the work begins as and when. Mr. Kikan?
Chair, I would also request that in our investigation of the infrastructure projects and management, we should also look at the issue of the supply chain management, because there is a very clear procedure in terms of that is this project that is supposed to be followed.
Kocha?
I think, Kikan, if you go to the scope, you realize, I think, your concerns are covered. To probe detailed project plans, tender documentation, financial information, progress reports, documentation, causes of implementation, delays, appointment of contractors and consultants, project management and oversight. I think, but I wanted to us to go back to what Honorable Basson had suggested earlier. If you look at the last bullet point, it talks about redeployment of project leaders such as Dr. Lamine. Maybe that's where we should bring in this element around the appointment, competence or qualification of project managers within the department and the water entities. Because then that takes you to your chief, to your director. The directors, yeah, that takes you to the directors. But we can talk on formulation, but I think it talks to the leadership within the department of this project.
No, Chair, I hear what the co-chair is saying. But if you look at the supply chain management, there are areas that are not included here. For instance, the advertisement of the project itself. Those issues are not covered here.
I guess the point you're raising, Mr. Kekana, talks to the area of work expected. It is called your key issue, your focus area. You're spot on, because that SCM shall then determine the scope of work insofar as activities are concerned, project detail plan, as read, tender documentation, and all of those. So that entire chain, correct. So it shall then have to form part of the focal area. still on the same project areas. Mr. Person?
Chairperson, how do we deal with, in this case, with projects? We can look at the Lesotho Islands project, the Clem William project, there's other projects here, where there was specific individual or political interference by the minister. How do we deal with the minister, where the minister had political interference in the work of the department, where she stopped projects, where she, like Dr. Dlamini, was fired by the minister. The implications of that, how do we deal with that? Where are we going to deal? Because in this department, the minister played, the previous minister played a central role in the collapse of this department. And that needs to be considered or also taken up with the projects. Because eventually that project will cost us, like the Lesotho Island, the minister stopped the project because a certain company did not put in a tender, and she, on the preliminary tenders that went out, and then she had to go out and they had to retender. That cost money. Eventually, the project could cost a few billion more. Exactly what happened now with the Clem William Dam, where the new minister came in and said, this project's going ahead. I'm appointing the construction unit, they're going ahead. The loss of time and money, it was the minister that stopped it. Not the department. The minister took a decision to stop it. And I want to know how we will deal with that.
Mrs. Lissom?
Thank you, Chair. I appreciate the frustration that the Honourable Person has, but I'm not on his point. I'm not too sure because I didn't go through your report, changes of your business plans, as it were. But also there is a manipulation around the expression of interest where the companies are asked to express their interest, and then the processes there are of following who then gets finally to do the project. I think it's very critical here. Yeah. That's one. Two, Chair, the other point that I would like us to add in terms of the... 1 second, Chair. The scope. Also, the signing off of completion. Because that one also, they are projects. I'm not too sure whether it's applicable with water and sanitation department. But from the space that I've been in, a member of the water board, I know that other projects get to be signed off, whereas there's a half completion or there's nothing on the ground. So I would like this committee, in terms of the infrastructure, also to look at that. So I'm suggesting that within that, also add a point signing off of completion, then you can look at the other specific projects that are within that space. Thank you, Chair.
You capture that. Okay. Mr. Person has raised an issue about the changing of, what do you call it? It talks about redeployment of project leaders such as Dr. Dlamini. The assumption there talks to that Lesotho Highland Water Project. I'd almost totally forgotten about and that helps. So there's also an issue, I hear you, but there's also an issue related to implementing agents and ministerial directives. So would it come through on the directives? Mrs. Chilana, not at Chair?
Thank you, Chairperson. Looking here on the probe courses on the scope, says probe courses of implementation delays, appointment of contractors and consultants, project management and oversight. Chairperson, I wanted to speak to the issue. I don't know, I can't remember very well because maybe one is dealing with many departments in terms of consultants. Consultants on their own, not consultants that are being solved by the department in terms of these projects, but consultants in a way that department, because this Department of Water and Sanitation is a technical, it's more of a technical department. If they are using their own in-house technical employees or officials, or do they have service providers who are doing work for themselves? In a case where you'll find a department is hiring, for instance, let me say, SABC, when the AG presented them with their annual report, they then went for a consulting firm that must investigate on the irregular expenditure. That kind of consultants. I just want to... I like attention, Chairperson. So I'll wait for you. It's fine. So I'm just trying to check in terms of these focus areas. Where do we put them? Comrade Godi, if you can assist me. I think you hear what I'm trying to say. In terms of consultants as service providers who are doing some work for the department. Don't we have them? I can't remember very well with this department.
If you were to go through the implementing agents, under those implementing agents, there's mentioning there made about a few of those, which talks about LTE and also CAR2 civils. As I said, these are a few. I guess the main issue that you are raising talks about there are two sets of issues. The department issues out directives to water boards, your TCTA, Trans-Caledon Tunnel Authority. They then advertise and appoint those service providers. Now, these are your people that you are making reference to. These CAR2 and LTE are those service providers that are appointed, in this case, by Lepelle Northern Water. When they shall have received a directive from the department, in this case, the ministerial directive, so to speak.
Okay, Chairperson. Okay, thank you.
Mr. Did you have your hand up, Mr. Bassan? Okay. We find, okay. AG?
Thanks, Honorable Chair. I think, Honorable Chair, the one other item or the matter that the PC has always been interested in is the capacity that sits within construction unit and how consideration is done around allocation of work between that construction unit as well as considering either implementing agents or external service providers. Because I think you'll start to realize that the capacity that sits within that construction unit was created obviously to cater for a number of projects that they would be running. But over time, that number of projects that has been allocated to that unit has been reducing significantly, even though the unit itself, the resources that sit within that, are not declining in the same correlation as the decline in the work that's allocated there. So you have people who are sitting here who can actually do some of the work. However, that work is moved out elsewhere. I think that's maybe something that you would want to look in, maybe within the infrastructure projects. Thanks.
The issue is raised in your infrastructure projects, contract management and project management. The last, in that middle column there, on the key issues, as an example, obviously, of that specific matter related to the capacity of that construction unit. That works against if you like, your ministerial directives. In other words, the fact that you today shall have heard a loss of income on the Glen Willem Dam over a period of time, a project that was stopped, expected to have been executed by the construction unit, but your department officials are going to tell you, Committee of Parliament, that the minister gave us an instruction that we must stop the construction unit, have this advertised so that a private role player must come in as a private service provider to execute what was to be remaining of that Glen Willem Dam, raising of the dam, of the wall rather. So that's what we are talking to. That's what also Mr. Basson was making reference to, and trusting that you are taking care of Mrs. Shilone. Okay, if we can move to the implementing agents, it is another area of interest that we were able to identify. The key area there talks about Lebelle Northern Water. The contract there talks about LTE. This was an emergency program which ran over 2 year, if not 3 year period. And the AG does tell us as to what qualifies an emergency project, juxtaposed with what we went through on this one. All water boards and their subcontractors. Now, the issue is raised, the internal controls as a scope over implementing agent and the monitoring and evaluation of the work of the implementing agents, and it goes on and on and on. If there is anything else on that specific one, on the implementing agents, Mr. Kega?
No, maybe this is Larry. on the scope, why are we saying internal control over implementing agents? Why can't we say control over implementing agents? Are we specifically looking at the internal part, or we are looking at the control of the that is the implementing agents?
Any comments or response to that? Dropped us? Mr. Kodi?
Yeah. No, I think let's take Comrade Kegana's point. Just remove internal.
Are we fine with that? Okay, thank you. Is there anything else still on the implementing agents? We did get your apology, Mr. Boy. Welcome. Okay, it's fine. In the absence of any, you want to add something, AG?
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I just wanted to check whether a project called Drop a Block is included within the drought relief element, because it was also a project that gave us a bit of a challenge.
I did not see it. We shall have to add it. It is one of those projects. It was not implemented by any of these water boards. Am I right?
You are right, Honorable Chair. It was implemented by Sidibeng Water Board.
Okay. Drop a block. We are including it
Okay, we shall then have to move straight to the ministerial directives to the water boards. Those are mentioned there on Lupelde, Northern Water, and also on Mhlatshwe Water. Are we saying these are only confined to these two specific water boards? Tumani? Are we have you confined, or are we confined only to these two? Can you speak to the mic? Speak to the mic.
Not necessarily, Chair. The purpose here is it's we just identified a few, but we can include other water boards that have received the directives.
Chair. Yeah.
Okay. Not that we can include. We will include. Because then if we're talking about completeness.
Yes, yes, yeah. We are going to do a search and include them.
If we can have those as soon as you can, at least before Thursday. Are we fine with that, technical team? Thank you. The assessment, the main issue there was about assessing all these directives with respect to the PEPO, the budget, and other related matters. And again, these were to be directives that had so much to do with the emergency also, even on this one. Yeah.
Yeah, I think the issue of the directives, the critical part thereof should also be implementation of the directives, because I would imagine that's where your irregular expenditure, your non-compliance, come in.
Okay. I tell you that we'll have more meeting to this before Thursday, or by Thursday rather. But the essence of it all talks to those matters related to the assessment of those directives. SIU investigations?
Just before we say SIU investigations, maybe we could just have said investigations. I don't know, maybe if we only have this SIU investigations, or do we have any other investigations that have been there and some of the recommendations have not yet implemented, because if now you limit it to the SIU investigation, might not even assist the cause. Because remember, even when they were briefing us, I think the same department, they reported to be taken back. I don't know, maybe I'm mixing issues. I think the report has got to be taken back because probably the president had not even yet seen it. So now I'm just raising the issue. It's not about SIU investigation. It's just if we can just say investigation, then we'll be able to break it to say which part of investigation.
Nice. You're spot on, Mr. Shulano. You're spot on. Indeed, these are investigations in general. Mentioning here only is about SIU with proclamation. And they can go on and on and on. I can safely say that among those
is your Modau Commission, which we haven't received any report as yet. That talks to investigations within the staff itself and some of the projects themselves that have been involved, that the staff has been involved in. And then also even in some of these entities of the government, Department of Water and Sanitation, there have been such investigations as well. PricewaterhouseCoopers, and so far as your TCT is concerned, is one of those. Now, at the end of the day, the aim is more on what finally comes out as recommendations and whether or not those recommendations are implemented. That's the main aim, as it were. Of course, the points are raised here about consequence management and the status of recovery. Any issues still on investigations, if there are any? Okay. Raw water revenue is an area that has been identified. Straightforward. Governance of the Water Board and Catchment Management Agency. Straightforward. AG?
I think Honorable Chair, just to make sure that TCTA is also considered in when we refer to water boards and TCTA. Thanks.
Thank you, sir. Governance of water boards, catchment management agency, and TCTA. TCTA. Thanks for that. Okay, if there is nothing else on that, we shall then move straight to the reconfiguration of the department entities. It's a straightforward one again. This one is... Okay, that should be it insofar as areas of work are concerned and the scope thereof. Mr. Bassa?
Chairperson, sorry, maybe I've missed it here quickly. We should not just invite officials that are implicated, but we should... to get a sense, invite other officials as well to come and tell us what's wrong within the department. Their view, like DDGs, come and explain what is the problem. Maybe the person is not implicated, but he can give us a sense of what goes on within the department. There could be previous DGs that...
What area are you talking to specifically?
The list, sorry, Chair, I'm on this list. Okay, sorry, I'm covered. Sorry, Chair. I should read.
Okay. Mrs. Lusoma?
Thank you, Honorable. I know I'm sitting in a blank spot for you, Chair. I'm sorry to say, Chair. Just to say, Chair, in terms of page 5 around the governance of water board and catchment and TCA, is that you don't necessarily want, in terms of the last column, the first bulletin, to probe the rationale. But what we want to know is to understand that are due processes in terms of the expected laws are implemented and followed. Because you can only rationale, they can always give you a reason. Nevertheless, there are boards that are regulated that they shouldn't be, a member should not be more than 2 terms being a board member. And the ever standing extension also implicates on that. So I'm saying that the problem is you need to reword it to say to interrogate the processes, the legal processes of the appointment of the board, as it were. Then you will have all those ones, then in terms of the details when you are dealing with, that exercise, Chair. Okay, the point is also talk about the termination, how do you go about it in terms of termination? Because there are other due processes which are not necessarily similar as the appointment of the board that needs to be followed.
Mr. Kudi?
I think I'll suggest that maybe let's leave it as it is. Because rationale has to do with the rational and irrational exercise of power and authority. Now, the rationale for appointments, it might as well be that you took someone who was a taxi driver and said, this person must chair water board. Surely, you have to explain why. Because then when you look at the consequence of the quality of leadership provided by such individuals, it does raise questions. Extensions. Why the extension of terms? That must, somebody must explain. It's not enough to say, I have the authority to do this. I'm understanding it in that context. That even if you have the authority and the legal rights to do something, you still must exercise power rationally, not irrationally, or use it for other purposes other than what should be in the best interest of the department or the entity. So in that broad sweep, I think I'll still be comfortable with seeking justification for actions taken.
Chair, I'm sorry to do this. I'm not suggesting we must take out the rationale, but also even whether it's subjective or not, but should be informed by certain prescript of law that you need to follow, even the power that you are given. But probably it's within that, and I'm saying I would be comfortable when it's clear, explicit, that our intention was saying that the due processes of appointment of the board members should be followed up to the T, regardless of what then you find yourself in as the executive authority.
I think the two do make sense, frankly speaking. Whilst the one has to be in accordance with the legislation, the other one has to be in accordance with the rationale as put here. So all what we need to do is simply just to add the due process, the due legal processes. I'm reminded here by one bullet point that talks about seconded officials, wherein your, it's not here, I'm just not sure where we put it, but the role that private sector plays, if you like, in capturing the department. I know of one specific instance where in an office in Port Elizabeth on 3rd Avenue in Warmer, in an office complex, it could be the size of this room. Your department office would be here, of water and sanitation. Across there shall be your Oricon. And somewhere there shall be your, what's this other office, organization? EOH, that is doing business with the department.
the point we are living, we are even told that some of those officials from Oricon literally walk on secondment to the department's offices. God knows what happens when it has to be awarding of any of these, let alone awarding, but the content of whatever is to be advertised, which ultimately I would imagine it can easily go to that private company. So I don't know how you might wish to put that, but I was also told that that is not only happening in Port Elizabeth. It is a trend. Now, you have such a trend effectively that talks to private sector having a hand in the work of the department on a day-to-day basis. Now, that's what I got to be incensed upon. Mr. Kika?
Chair, maybe as a compromise. I normally don't like compromises. But can't we then say to probe and we say slash the legal requirements for the appointments and extensions of and termination of the board? Because if you listen to both motivations, they actually don't talk to the same issue. If you listen to what the co-chair is talking about, he's talking about the rationale of the appointment and blah, blah, blah. And the that is Honorable Lesoma here, he's talking about the legal requirements that is of the appointments that is of those individuals, whether the law was followed to the latter in the appointments of those individuals.
I had thought we had ruled so far as the two not necessarily talking in conflict to another. The issue that we are about here, we are about governance of the water boards. And other entities. What we have been going through is an experience about the appointment of those boards and the chief executive officers. Those are the main issues that you've been talking about. On one hand, you want to see a due process being followed. On the other hand, without necessarily tampering on the operational issues per se, but equally important, is that rationale? Because the example is made by the co-chair here that says you have that taxi operator driver. At the end product shall tell you that you are going to struggle to come up with any meaningful direction that takes that organization forward. So the issues they have been raised quite prominently, whether or not we are going to have any water board that is moving forward. And that's what we've been dealing with as we speak now. Almost 6 out of 9 of those water boards are going through such an experience. So. I hear you, but at the same time you are having here two complementary comments that are all taking us forward, appreciating your concerns. You are still on the same issue? Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I totally support the point. It's just that probably when we reflect to the draft in terms of the wording, that we must also look at unintended relationship with the the department of the private sector, as it were. For an example, private sector will sponsor a social responsibility activity by the department, like Women's Day, Youth Month, and all that. Whereas they've got also their intention is not only to do that one, but also to gain, because even you don't need to be in the same vicinity in terms of the office space. You can even do that relationship through the wires. So I'll suggest probably, I'm thinking while I'm opening my mouth at the same time, to say we must also look in terms of the scope, look at the potential companies that do business with the government, and how far does their relationship go. But I'm sure we can't find it. It's just a two word that crafts it. It's just that it's slipping on my mind. Because it's not a javelin of a special type, but there is a relationship. If you are naive as a department, then you enter to that one. They can even sponsor to say, I'll assist you to do this business plan. By implications in terms of their specifications also, they will make sure that they craft it in such a way that it only favors them. Somebody who knows infrastructure technical terms, we can craft it in a nice way, but we'll find it in the process before you finalize the change.
Okay, Sharon is wide awake. I could see her almost drafting. Yeah, she's one of the content advisors. Thank you, Sharon. Welcome, Mr. Chauke. We did get your apology that you were busy with the airports at Home Affairs by the Oppenheimers. Okay. Members, if there is nothing else, I take it that we are done. The list of possible witnesses to appear instead of officials, am I right? The list of possible persons to appear, these are your officials, these are your audit committee, these are your past departmental officials, these are your project managers, these are your implementing agents, these are your private sector service providers, I'm not sure about the Reserve Bank. I take this to be saying something along the lines of that overdraft that the department has been talking about as being a Reserve Bank overdraft, which later turns out that it was a National Treasury. These are your whistleblowers. Perhaps it might just be okay that we allow the Reserve Bank. If there is anything that we are going to get from the Reserve Bank, save for your National Treasury. Okay. Mrs. Lesoma, note at Timmy.
Probably, Honorable Chair, instead of locking ourselves with the outlined bodies or persons to come before the committee, there must be a bulletin that helps to give us in the process of our engagement. Also, we may identify other persons or individuals that we think that they must come before us. So I think we must include that. It will help us then.
So that we're not limited.
Yes, Chair. The very last one, so that I don't raise my hand, Chair. Can the drafters also ensure that the figures are accurate as it were when it comes back? Just to double check the figures, where there's the figures.
Okay, Timmy.
Yeah, I just agree with my sister over there. Just any other person as the committee may require. Any such other person, something like that.
Mr. Gekhan? Okay. Members, we seem to have done a great deal of amount of work thus far. I want to propose that we come back next week. having to finalize everything, especially your terms of reference. The Committee on Public Service and Administration has requested that they be given an opportunity to go through some of this process. Yes, there are other areas that would need to be included. We've requested the scribe to take us through all of this that we go through so that we don't have to come back again. I would imagine out of here, it should be possible that we are able to get the very, very final draft that we'll have to come back and adopt in the coming week. We also have, can't remember this other area. I think we have covered both your terms of reference and also your areas of work. For your, what I would propose we do, for your program, we finalize, as we finalize the draft itself. For your program, we'll have to go through this program on our own thoroughly so that we don't have too much time spent on this program going forward. When we finalize our terms of reference and also scope of area of work, we at least spend no more than 30 minutes. And then the rest of the time we spend it on the actual program itself. Timmy?
Thank you, Chair. Chair, just on the program, I see that you've set out two sessions for finalizing of questions. And I'm just a bit concerned about the finalizing questions. Are we going to have to list all our questions up front that we want to ask all these officials? Because this often these things are very fluid. And you ask questions as you go. I really, and I'm sure my SCOPA colleagues agree, would hate to be limited by a list of 10 questions and you have to stick to those questions during the course of the inquiry. So I would respectfully say that we set that aside and trust members to come up with their own questions. We could also save an entire session if we're just talking about the questions. It would also take quite a long time to go through all the questions that we intend asking and discuss while we want to ask these questions. I think it's, I don't know who drafted that, but I think it's a bit silly, with all due respect. And then can I just ask that if we meet again next week by that time that the chairs have allocated us to certain areas so we can get starting on our research and our investigation work so we're ready when we start. Thanks.
Mrs. Schiller?
Chairperson, mine is just on the dates in terms of the program. When I'm checking, actually when I look at the time, I thought maybe I'm not going to raise my hand because I can see there's no even time to go to lunch. Because the I see here we're starting on the 30th of May.
Why don't you do it the following way? The proposal is for us to finalize this program next week alongside the terms of reference and also the areas of work that we shall have agreed upon. We don't spend much time. We go through the program as draft and then we spend no more than an hour on it. With all these that members are pulling together. Okay, if that is the case, we shall then take this as having been work in progress until we meet next week. Mr. Gordy will announce something for SCOPA.
Thanks, Comrade Chair. Comrades, tomorrow we meeting with National Treasurer on deviations and expansions, as well agreed on our quarterly engagements, but it looks like they recall that last year they had agreed on our recommendations to go and review their administration and management of deviations. So they will start there with us tomorrow on their process of managing and approving deviations. For the first quarter of this year, they still are auditing the deviation report. So tomorrow, Ntombi, can we start at 9:30 tomorrow? Right. Let's start at 9:30. I mean, it's going to be probably take us an hour and a half, and then we're fine, we're done, and then that's it. Okay. Thanks, comrades.